Ladies and gentlemen, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Ladies and gentlemen, this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. It is Monday, August 28th, 2017. Looks like we've got some action in the Korean Peninsula. That is to say, North Korea fired off a multi-stage ICBM, it would appear by all accounts, that went over Japan and landed about halfway to Guam. Now, you're going to hear it broke up into three pieces. Those look like stages, perhaps. The information's still raw coming in, but the fact that it went over Japan without interception should be something that people might just be a little bit wary about. But nonetheless, so that's the news, the breaking news. That's, of course, the flood in Houston. We have a new port, and that's the Port of Houston, apparently. I'm not being funny. I mean, this is an extremely serious situation in Texas. We pray for our listeners down there, pray for everyone down there, in the Houston and everyone that's affected by the flood. But the news that is breaking now is that, North Korea reportedly fired an ICBM, perhaps 500 plus 550 kilometers into, low Earth orbit and, made it halfway to Guam over Japan, unfettered, unmolested, and the report is it broke into three pieces. However, I believe it separated. It would be like a multi-stage type of situation. This is raw information, so it's subject to change. Just letting you know, that's what the situation is. Now, we've got a great show lineup for you tonight. We've got in studio just a fantastic man. I'll tell you what, this guy, you know, I love this guy. I do. T.C. Joseph. He's the author of This Generation series of novels. You know him. You know him. You know his books. You know his books. This Generation series. He's in studio with us. He's going to be flying shotgun or riding shotgun with us. For the first hour, and then he's going to be on the 2 hours talking with us about many things. His story is so amazing, and he's got so many amazing stories. So that's what we have planned. Peter Chowka is going to join us the first hour to talk about what he's written, and we've actually got an in-studio audience here as well. In addition to T.C. Joseph, we've got my daughter, who does ordinarily work in the office. She was somewhat off today, actually taking care of some grandchildren. So it's this is truly a family business and truly a family. But with that, I'm going to kick it over to you, Joe.
Yeah, great to be here. We do have T.C. Joseph in studio. He's actually sitting right across from me. Folks, you can't see it at the moment.
Oh,
but
yeah,
before
I interrupt you one more time, I do want to mention the portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. That's right, ZipRecruiter.com. If you own a business, You gotta go to ZipRecruiter.com if you own a business. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. If you're hiring, this is the place to go. They got a special offer just for Hagmann listeners. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagmann. And, we'll have more on that later. Go ahead, Joe. No, I won't interrupt you. I promise.
Yeah, you were talking about North Korea. The South Korean military said the missile flew about 1,700 miles, reaching a height of 341 miles. And it was this is just the latest in a series of tests that North Korea has been launching in the last few weeks, continuing to intensify, and obviously we're going to see some reactions.
By far, though, Joe, has been one of the most provocative.
Yeah, especially launching it over Japan, and we will see the responses. Now, there was a number of military drills being held in the South Korean Peninsula, joint military drills by the U.S. and South Korea. And North Korea's dear leader, was very unhappy about that last week. and stated that he was going to continue to conduct missile tests.
Do you know what they're doing? And T.C. Joseph, you'll appreciate
this. What are they? They're launching missiles?
No. Well, that too. But they're actually using World War II era biplanes that are successful in avoiding radar. Think about that. Think about that. They could carry up to 10 troops or, I don't know, certainly not your grandma's fruit basket.
Well, we'll see what happens. Also, we have the flooding in southern Texas. That's a big deal, and I'm sure throughout the week we'll continue to see more on that as this is not over yet. And we had another battle at Berkeley, if you will, with the alt-left Antifa attacking a number of peaceful protesters in Berkeley. 14 people were arrested. There's a few pieces on HagmanReport.com. Folks, go to HagmanReport.com, bookmark that site. There's a number of articles up there showing what happened this weekend and some of the media's surprising responses. One was Joe Scarborough today with Mika Brzezinski, as they said that the Antifa group was a fascist group for using the violence and the violent tactics to suppress the First Amendment. That and much more. We do have with us Peter Barry Chowka. Folks, he has an article up on HagmanReport.com right now. You can go there and check it out. It's we put it back up to the top of the screen.
The system is rigged.
It's great to have you as always. What's on your mind?
Well, hi, Doug. Hi, Joe.
Hey.
It's nice to be with you again. Why don't we start with that article that is up at the Hagman Report today at the top of the page.
That made some people with a blow. I don't know if you got personal blowback, but just the everyone should read that article. I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'm going to shut up now. But the article itself just got a lot of response, and wow! Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I wish it was actually getting even more response. It was initially published at American Thinker on Saturday, and then I rewrote it and made it even more hard-hitting, I think, when I put it online at the Hagman Report yesterday, where it still is. And this story came to me on Friday, last Friday, through a source. And what the source revealed was the raw data from the Nielsen company rating surveys. Now, Nielsen, we know, is the company that has been rating television programs on cable and broadcast forever, since the start of TV, seriously, in the early 1950s. So, of course, the ratings are important because they determine advertising rates that channels or cable channels or whatever can charge for the advertising, and they also determine how we look at these networks. The three cable news channels, Fox, MSNBC, and CNN, are now engaged in a war of attrition for ratings supremacy, so it's important to see who's on top. Well, when I got a look at, courtesy of my source, at the raw Nielsen ratings reports from 1 week ago today, that is Monday, August 21st, I found something very, very interesting. Now, that was the night, you remember, that at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, prime time, President Trump made his first primetime address to the nation on his plans for our going forward with Afghanistan, policy in Afghanistan. So there was a big viewership that night. The broadcast channels were covering his speech live, as were the three cable news channels, MSNBC, Fox, and CNN. Now, the Nielsen ratings, of course, rate how many people were watching whatever channel. And they're very sophisticated, and people have raised questions about the legitimacy of how they do it, but we won't get into that for now, assuming that that all is legit there. But what is not legit is it apparently is up to the channels, the stations, or the networks involved to inform the Nielsen company what's airing at any given time of the day. So last Monday night at 9 Eastern Time, MSNBC reported that they had a special program with the president's address, and Fox News reported the same thing, basically a special program. They didn't say, oh, it's the 5 on Fox, which normally is on 9 o'clock, and MSNBC didn't say it's not Rachel Maddow at 9 o'clock because she wasn't on. The president was on live speaking to the nation. However, when I looked at what CNN was reporting to Nielsen, it said AC360, Anderson Cooper 360, from 9 to 9:30 p.m. Well, that's wrong. That's incorrect. That's fake. And the reason it's important, it's not just some minor error. It's important because the ratings for that period at CNN and all the other channels were two or more times higher. There are two or more times as many people watching television at 9 o'clock Eastern last Monday to see the President of the United States give this critical speech. So if Anderson Cooper's show gets credit for that double rating, then it means at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, his ratings are going to be pumped up unfairly compared to the other two channels that CNN is competing with. And it turns out that this is not a complete anomaly. The Wall Street Journal, I discovered, did a story last month about how even the broadcast networks are doing funny things with identifying their programs to Nielsen. For example, the NBC Nightly News on the Friday before Memorial Day, which is a very low-rated night, they didn't want to have to take credit or blame for the low ratings, so they misspelled the name of the program that night. Instead of NBC Nightly News spelled correctly, they spelled Nightly, N-I-T-E-L-Y. And when this was reported to the Nielsen company, and it's all done by computers and bots, there's no human hand in this, so the Nielsen bots reported this as an entirely separate program, so the main NBC Nightly News ratings, spelled correctly, were not sandbagged with this low-rated night. So these are the games that some of the networks are playing, but to their credit, MSNBC and Fox News did not try to pull a fast one last Monday, but CNN did. Now, you know, we've been discussing for months now the rise of fake news, and CNN, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many other people, is really in the forefront of the fake news. I mean, they are front and center with fakery like we have never seen before in the mainstream media. But yet, it's not easy to prove it. I mean, we can prove it. Sean Hannity proves it on many of his shows by running down what CNN is reporting and how it's not exactly in line with the reality and the facts. But, you know, people on the left, fans of CNN, and of course CNN themselves, can make a case, as empty as it might be, that they are doing the public's business, speaking truth to power, and all the rest. So it's hard to really nail it down and find a smoking gun there. Well, I felt that when I found this data and this evidence, that this was in effect a smoking gun. This was not a mistake on CNN's part. This was an out-and-out attempt to falsify the ratings. And of course, if they would do that, then what else would they do? Well, we know what else they're doing. They're faking the news pretty much 24/7 on CNN. Now, by publishing this article first in American Thinker on Friday night and had a Saturday Dateline date attached to it, it actually was probably not good timing because we're in the last weekend of August. There's low interest in political news. And of course, on Saturday, the terrible weather situation emerged in Texas and continues to this day. So understandably, a lot of the media's attention and the nation's attention is on that story. And I was hoping that Drudge might have picked up my story on the fakery at CNN, or Sean Hannity might have tweeted it, as he did. He tweeted a story of mine last week at both American Thinker and the Hagman Report, and I assume you noticed a bit of a rise in the page views.
Sure.
On that day.
Yeah.
It was Thursday.
Yep.
And he indicated that to me that he would be tweeting again, but maybe he didn't want to get involved with this kind of, you know, perception of mudslinging at a competitive channel, although he's certainly been very critical of CNN. But you know, maybe this article will be around. It's going to be at the Hagman Report. It will be at American Thinker. And by the way, I wanted to mention that, of course, we're doing this program live today on Monday, August 28th, 2017. But I assume that many folks will be listening later to a podcast or watching a video podcast on YouTube. And so I would recommend that they track this article down at either American Thinker or really at the Hagman Report. And to make it even easier, I created a very simple URL, because I now have at this point today 24 articles of mine that have been posted at the Hagman Report since the middle of July. I think it's in 50 days I've posted 24 articles
at
the Hagman Report. So it's almost one article every 2 days. And to make it very easy to find the link to all of these articles, you simply have to go to tinyurl.com, tinyurl.com/pch2r. tinyurl.com/P as in Peter, C as in Charles, H2R. Very easy. And that will take you right to my entire archive of articles in American Thinker. As far as I know, they'll be there in virtual perpetuity. I'm certainly not going to take them down.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Peter. I didn't tell you this. I didn't have a chance to tell you this. We're having a page where your articles are indexed. We're going to have a complete page where all of your articles are going to be indexed, dedicated to you, because you have done, as you mentioned, 24 in 50 days. I counted them. I think it was yesterday, Sunday. Yeah, and that includes the one you did Sunday as well. So there will be a page, and I'll send you the link. In fact, it'll probably be something. It'll probably have your name. It'll be forward slash with your name, your last name on there.
Great.
So just
Thank
to
you.
Let you know, it's being worked on right now as we speak. So because of the prolific nature of your writings, and this and folks, please. Take the latest article, and you're right, Peter. This is an amazing, to me, it's an amazingly important article. This tells you everything you want to know about CNN, in my view. So, wow. Yeah.
Their credibility is really challenged. We know that. We've seen it. We're monitoring it daily, and it really is sickening to watch how that channel has fallen into the abyss of fakery, and this again to me is a smoking gun. It might be a small one, but it's a significant one, and I don't know how they can hope to explain their way out of it. I mean, there's really no explaining it. By the way, I wanted to point out we're convening here on August 28th, and this is a rather historic day, I think, in American history. It was 54 years ago today that the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom occurred, at which Dr. Martin Luther King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech, which he wrote longhand the night before, having stayed up most of the night. So, I don't know, whenever August 28th comes around, I always think of that. I was watching that coverage live at the time. It was on all day on all three of the commercial broadcast networks, and of course, books can be written and maybe have been on the background of that march, who was behind it, who was funding it, and what came out of it, but it was a very significant event. You know, another thing I wanted to mention too, you know, Doug, your morning show is seriously impairing my sleep patterns, because I've become addicted to checking out your hour-long daily morning show at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific time. And, you know, it's in the, I think it really is presenting Doug Hagman Unplugged. Finally, you have time
or
to just
or
let
unhinged.
It all hang out.
Yeah.
And really, it's, you know, I listen to your shows, and of course, I'm enlightened and informed and agree with just about everything you're reporting and analyzing. And then I go to the mainstream media, even Fox News, and I turn that on and I think, my God, you know, we're getting very close to the truth from Douglas J. Hagman. And then we go to the mainstream media, even the best as we consider it, Fox News, and it just pales in comparison. And this is how deep the issues are now, how serious they are. And it's like every time I have an appointment to do one of these shows, I start thinking about it seriously several days before, because it's serious business we're engaged with here. I mean, we're looking at all of this news, this this full spectrum assault on our minds, bodies, and spirit by the shadow government and the deep state. And it's all we can do to just try to keep up with the news as it's breaking. And then because of our age, maybe we've been around for a while, and we can see patterns finally with some maturity that we hopefully have. We're starting to really be able to connect the dots. So that's what I've been trying to do. And one of the inspirations there too was, I heard your interview last week, I believe it was, with David Kupalian of WorldNet Daily.
Yes. Yeah.
A superb, superb interview. I was just riveted to what he was saying and how he was saying it. And what a fantastic hour that was. I would really advise people who missed it to track down that podcast. But, you know, I felt that he's of a similar vintage probably to me. He was talking about being around and paying attention in the late 50s, growing up in the 60s, and that's my area too. I feel like I've been paying attention for about 45 years now, and he was asking, or actually answering the question, going a long way towards answering, how have we wound up with the United States of today, 2017, when your memory goes back to the 50s and 60s, and it was a different reality. It was a different country. It was like a different planet. And so, you know, that's, I mean, we've been on the long march, basically, ever since the 1960s, certainly. But even, as you pointed out, I think as recently as this morning, Doug, on your program, you could probably say 100 years this has been going, with the real onset of the communist foothold, first in the Soviet Union and then spreading worldwide. But we are in the midst of this long march now, which has achieved critical mass, I would argue. And, you know, I was thinking about time. You think about the 1960s to now. That's about 45 years in my experience. 1962, I started paying attention. And if you go backwards from 1962, 45 years, you're in 1907. So that gives you some frame of reference of how much time has elapsed since 1962 to now. But, of course, if you look at films, videos, TV programs, still photos from the 1960s, even the 1950s, the landscape looks a lot like it does now. There were interstate superhighways, there was suburbia, there was television, telephones, radio, stereo, music, and of course a lot has changed since then, but a lot of it invisible. Whereas if you went back to 1907, you'd be in the endpoint of the steam age, the transition
isn't that interesting? I mean, thanks for bringing that up. What a difference. You know, you go back 100 years and then separate the 100 in half and look at the far end of the century versus today, and then look at the midpoint of the century versus today in the landscape that you pointed out. I think it's just dramatic. The 100-year dramatic, the 50-year, it's more subtle than it is in your face, obviously. But I want to ask you this: when you're talking about the anniversary, 54th anniversary of the Martin Luther King speech, what do you think Martin Luther King would say? And I was thinking about you today because I've got a program on my computer, show notes, you know, and this day in history always pops up, so. It's amazing, but nonetheless, what do you think Martin Luther King would say if he saw what was going on today with respect to civil rights and the behavior of the left and the behavior of Black Lives Matter and the behavior of, well, or the legacy of Obama? What do you think he'd say?
Well, that's a good question, and it's sometimes asked. And, you know, I had a personal encounter with Martin Luther King on November 30th, 1964. That was just a year after the I Have a Dream speech, and he actually gave pretty much the same speech at an event in Stamford, Connecticut, which was the city next to the town that I grew up in. I was a sophomore in high school at the time, and I attended this event where he spoke. He was introduced by Bayard Rustin, the communist, and the thing I remember from that event was, although it was packed and I had a seat on the stage. I put my microphone on the podium. I was close to him. I photographed him. I shook his hand. I was riveted to his speech, of course, and I have apparently the only complete tape recording of his entire speech, because I've researched that and another copy does not exist, although I'm holding on to it because if I try to do anything with it, I'll be sued by the MLK library, which has copyrighted everything he's ever said or done, including recording. So, but it's very interesting, because one thing I want to mention about that encounter was Dr. King at that point was not yet walking on water. I mean, his reputation has certainly exploded since then, partially legitimately, I think you could say. But, you know, he's one of these people. Like, another one is Cesar Chavez, who I also interviewed in 1975 when I was working in non-commercial radio in Washington, D.C. And Cesar Chavez arrived with just one other person. You know, no big deal. Now he's got a holiday named after him in California, schools named after him. I mean, he's a god, basically, to many folks, as is Dr. King. I remember reading once that among school children today, I think 97% can identify who Dr. King is or was. The next closest is Abraham Lincoln at around 60%. So Dr. King has certainly gotten the spin for his legacy in the years since, but I mean, God only knows what he would say today. He was sort of moving in a more leftward position. When he was assassinated, he was planning on leading an event in Washington, D.C., which was going to be a camp-in on the Mall called Resurrection City, and he hoped that thousands of people would go to D.C. and camp out on the Mall until certain demands were met. He was also coming out very strongly against the Vietnam War, and I wouldn't argue with him about that, certainly, in the light of history. But I don't know. You know, we have his niece to look forward to, who appears frequently on Fox News and is an accomplished person in her own right, Dr. Alviva King. And she's, of course, very conservative and has the opinion, which she stated on many occasions, that her late uncle would probably not be in cahoots with Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all the other radical elements that have taken over what's left of the civil rights movement today. So I think a case could be made that Dr. King, who was certainly a smart man and one of the best public speakers the country has ever birthed, would not be in sync with these mad people who are running around today spouting all of this communist rhetoric, basically. And, you know, as were many, I mean, many of the liberals, and he was a liberal, I think, a man of peace by his own admission, and, you know, a follower of Gandhi and Henry David Thoreau, and a great writer, of course. His letter from the Birmingham jail is oft quoted and oft republished. So, you know, he was a man of thought and learning, and as were many of the liberals and many of the Democrats who were around then. Another one was George McGovern, Senator George McGovern, who I got to know fairly well, worked on his presidential campaign in 1972, and last saw him in 2009 in La Jolla, California, where we reconnected 3 years before he died. There aren't too many of them left today who are Democrats or liberals who have their heads on straight, but, you know, it's really only anyone's guess. But I like to think that Dr. King wouldn't have, you know, had he not been assassinated, would have only grown and not retrenched at so many left, as so many people on the left have. I mean, a good example of someone who's completely blown it is California Governor Jerry Brown. I had a lot of experience covering him starting in 1976 when I first met him, and I covered his Senate campaign in 78, his second presidential campaign in 1980, and his final campaign in 1992. And I had to remind myself recently, because he's evolved into nothing but the worst kind of identity politics political hack now that he's in his mid to late 70s and in his fourth term as governor of California. And actually in 1975 and 76, he was a very interesting figure who was like a new Democrat who said things like, we have to move left and right at the same time, meaning that we have to look for issues that will unite the country rather than divide. Whereas now he's simply a hack Democrat who's into dividing and conquering and, open borders advocate, a complete and total loss. I mean, I just tune him out whenever I see him. I just can't stand him. But yet, I have many tapes I recorded of him, speeches, complete speeches from 1976, interviews I did with him, three or four long-form interviews in which when I read these things today or listen to the tapes today, I say, how can this be the same person 40 years, 41, 42 years later who I was covering back in the day? It really is a commentary on how far we've come or how we really fallen off the edge as far as the left or liberals are concerned.
And Peter, you know, your analysis of CNN and Fox News, from the ratings to what's going on behind the scenes with the personalities, I don't know if you caught the first, just the very beginning of the show. I wanted to make sure I asked you this.
Yeah, and sorry for knocking you off track. Go on.
We continue to see the violence over the weekend at Berkeley, and we've seen the news media, both in the print and the mainstream, continue to not only cover it up, but to protect the Antifas and the groups that are committing the violence. Today we saw Joe Scarborough call Antifa a fascist organization that is oppressing free speech, and went on to give some other criticisms of Antifa. Also, the Washington Post today came out and did a story calling them, violent, the violent left, and kind of telling the other side of the story, more so than they have done. I want to ask you, do you believe that, we're seeing this due to the American citizens' pushback vocally against the media for lying about these, domestic extremist groups? Or do you think they have another agenda in mind when they do this?
Oh, I'm sure they have agendas in mind. The question is which one. I think your first point there, that they are now aware that there's pushback and that the ratings are falling in the case of CNN, certainly, and they may get a run for their money. MSNBC may get a run for its money soon when the Fox schedule changes this fall, and as I've reported, and we'll see if this is true, Sean Hannity moves to 9 p.m. and gives Rachel Maddow a run for her money. But, newspaper circulation is down everywhere. Newspaper advertising is down. And the newspapers that are left are largely running on fumes now. So if they continue to anger half of their potential readership by continuing to report not only fake news, but absurdly fake, phony news, they're going to really be cutting into their own bottom line, which they haven't seemed to be that concerned with, but push is going to come to shove here soon. There was the Washington Post, speaking of them, they ran a piece several days ago by Todd Gitlin. He's an old SDSer and hardcore leftist from the 60s who has been teaching at Columbia University for several decades, and he's a considers himself a scholar of the 1960s, a spin doctor of the 60s, of course. But he wrote a kind of interesting piece, a little bit off the track from what we've seen. And again, he's a hardcore leftist, and he kind of defended the left and bashed the right, saying the right in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s was using tactics similar to what Antifa and the radicals are using today. In my opinion, it was a weak case, but he tried to make it. But then he ended the article, and I read it quickly. I have to go back and really look at it more closely, but I skimmed it last night. He ended his article in the Washington Post 2 or 3 days ago. This is Todd Gitlin I'm referring to, G-I-T-L-I-N. He ended by giving a mild criticism to Antifa, and I thought, well, at least that's something, but I don't expect these characters on the left, either their vehicles, their venues, their news channels, their publications, to really wake up and start reporting accurate news. I think they're just trying to cover their butts at this point and not lose their total audience or total credibility. But yeah, it is surprising. I didn't see that thing with Joe Scarborough today. That is a surprise. But you know, who knows? Who knows what's going on there? I mean, in my 3.5 months of reporting obsessively on the cable news wars, and I think I've written 40 articles for American Thinker in that period of time on the cable news wars and Fox News, and quite a few for the Hagman Report, developed sources at Fox News, read everything I can in open sources. And it's a story that really is difficult to comprehend what's going on in the media today. The media is so centralized and big and rich. Fox News, I think, makes something like $1 billion a year in profits through advertising and fees they get from the cable providers. And I mean, these are really big stakes. So you can imagine the machinations that are going on behind the scenes that we never see. And just the little hints I get from my sources at Fox News, it really boggles the mind when you get any kind of insight. And of course, a lot of it I can't report because the sources are confidential. And to keep them going, I can't really say at this point what I'm being told
and
of
Peter,
the time.
I'd like you to speak to that. And by the way, I want to thank Global Star Radio Network for allowing us to skip the bottom of the hour break, because Peter Barry-Chalka has got such great information. But, it's often said now in journalism, because, and I've never seen this like this before. I'm not a journalist. I'm an investigator. But I'm used to dealing with confidential sources, all right? So, I mean, I get that mm-hmm. whole thing. And I'm also used to dealing with the media to some extent, and I know that I know how the media is fed from an investigative point of view on stories, especially on the local level. But all that said, what in the world? Everyone seems to be scared to talk. Everyone seems to be afraid to give their name when they're mm-hmm. talking to people like yourself. To me, I don't use my name. Because, you know, I'm going to lose my job, or worse. I mean, it's that bad out there, isn't it?
It's even worse. I had an experience a couple of weeks ago where I quoted, a source at Fox News that is a source that should be on the record, and I'll just leave it at that. Let's say they have a position where they often talk pretty much on the record. So this source gave me some information, and I didn't use the source's name. I simply reported what the source had told me without alluding at all to who the source was. As soon as the article went online and I shared it with this source, at 3:30 in the morning Eastern time, I got an email asking me to amend that part of the article and delete the report that I was saying without quoting the source by name. And I thought, hey, that's really a new level of sensitivity that I've never seen before. I mean, there was no way to identify who that source was. It wasn't even a controversial comment per se. But I took it down. I didn't want to, put that person's job in jeopardy. And it wasn't really critical to the article. So I'm happy to oblige and something like that. But, you know, that was a learning experience for me where I thought, you know, I have not seen it all yet. We're getting into even stranger territory than we have in the past. But yeah, there's, you know, people talk about the 1950s when they bash Senator Joe McCarthy, Tail Gunner Joe, who I know both you and I have, Doug, have quite a bit of respect for, actually, when you know the true story of
Amen,
where he was
brother.
Coming from.
Amen.
But, the meme that we have about the 1950s, oh, it was a McCarthyism and this climate of fear and blacklists. And by the way, most of the people who wound up on the temporary blacklist deserved to be there. They were communists, car-carrying communists. But anyway, I would argue it's as bad or worse today because of the fear that is pervasive. And, you know, not least because, I mean, just to follow up on where I was going a little while ago when I mentioned the passage of time from the early 60s to now, and there have been profound changes in these 40, 45 years, four decades or so. many of which we don't see. And one of the things we don't see, obviously, is the transition from the analog or the electric age to the digital age. And how this translates now, I think, in an area we're concerned with is surveillance, monitoring, and control. I mean, it damned well obvious by now, and should have been for a decade or more, that every single thing we're doing, saying, emailing, doing online, if not thinking in our private thoughts, is being recorded somewhere in a huge database by the federal government. And, you know, isn't it interesting that when President Trump made the allegation 6 months or more ago that he had been wiretapped, he and his people were being wiretapped before he took office, right? And everybody jumped on him. The mainstream media, the other politicians, even most Republicans say, what? We're saying, what are you talking about? You know, this is crazy. Well, these months later now, it's being pretty much admitted that, well, we hear the term unmasking, that these various Obama administration figures unmasked these wiretaps for surveillance or transcripts on all these different people, hundreds of people who are under surveillance, many of them in the Trump campaign. So there is evidence right there that there was wiretapping and surveillance going on, but the dots are not being connected, right? So, it, you know, we're into really deep water now with the surveillance, but, you know, I have to say that...
And thank you for bringing that up. The analog, the digital, to me, it degraded the signal as far as I'm concerned, but it allowed for packets of storage to be minimized. So instead of these big tapes, of course, and the analog style, now it's stored on digitally, and you could fit Library of Congress on, you know, I'm kidding, you know, the size of a pack of cigarettes, we're crying out loud. You get the idea.
And how inexpensive it is, yeah. Doug. I mean, 10 years ago, I mean, I've been into computers and the internet for about 23 years now. I was a really early adopter of the World Wide Web. And storage used to be a real problem. And even, and, you know, I remember I have receipts of everything I bought, like hard drives, USB drives, computers. 10 years ago, I think it was like thousands of times as expensive to get storage that, you know, compared to today. I mean, the price today is not even pennies on the dollar. It's micro pennies on the dollar from what it cost 10 years ago. So this translates into what is possible for the government to pay for storage. And of course, they have unlimited funding anyway with these humongous buildings that they've got, like in Utah and elsewhere, the size of many football fields, were just loaded with computers and storage facilities to store everything. It's easy to do now, and they're doing it. We know they're doing it. I mean, people like William Binney from the NSA have been saying for years that they're doing it. So, but it doesn't seem to trouble most people. But this is a way that we're into the digital age now, and we don't even see it. It's kind of invisible. You know, it might be in the palm of your hand in terms of your phone, but people aren't relating to that when they're working their phone and looking at Facebook or whatever they're doing. And yet, I think this is this kind of assault on our psyche, our again, mind, body, and spirit, is contributing to that level of paranoia and fear. We know that we're being listened to and monitored. And those of us who have had to get beyond it because of the work we do are just saying, well, the hell with it. You know, what are you going to do? We're not going to defeat it. They're going to know what we're doing, even if we don't broadcast it or write about it or talk about it. So we may as well let it all hang out now. We've got no option left, and let the chips fall where they may. But, you know, for a lot of people, especially when they have jobs to protect, they're not going to go there. They're not going to even begin to think of going there.
Peter, we, you know, what we see with these political rallies, we just this last week in Berkeley, what we were just talking about, it was a Patriot prayer rally. Now, the media turned around and labeled it a white supremacist alt-right rally, which stoked the protesters and counter-protesters to come. We've seen a rash of these rallies popping up all over the country, whether it is somebody trying to promote a white supremacist agenda, but more often than not, it seems to be just members of the left and or right promoting free speech and being met by these Antifa and Black Lives Matter type protesters. The latest one was an anti-Marxist rally that had to be canceled in order because of these protesters. Do you think that people should stay away from these types of rallies, at least till this stuff cools off? Do you think they should engage in these types of rallies?
And the reason he's asking you this is because we had this conversation earlier about this very topic, and I'm not sure what the answer is. So we look to the good-looking intellectual out there, our guest, Peter Berrychalka, to answer that question.
You guys ask good questions, and they're not always easy to answer, which is a sign of a good question. They require thought. My initial thought, as someone who in the 60s and 70s demonstrated or covered demonstrations more often than not in Washington, D.C., where I was spending a lot of my formative years, I have to say I don't like the thought that we have to stand down and not express ourselves in a peaceful, literate, informed way. You know, I understand the danger that lurks out there. I mean, I would rather see organizers of credible, peaceful, conservative or traditional constitutional rallies appeal to the police in that community or the political structure and demand protection. I mean, this is what the, in a number of these,
yeah.
Like in Charlottesville, we saw, I mean, that Charlottesville has so many questions written all over it, you don't even know where to begin. I mean,
they continue to grow, too.
And if not with a big false flag with a capital FF, it looks to me like there were a lot of little false flags coming together there and manipulating the situation, you know, from the organizer of the original event on down, but... You know, whatever. The event in Boston that really wasn't able to take place because I think there were 20 or 40 people on the common who were trying to demonstrate for free speech against upwards of 40,000 rabid counter demonstrators, and the events in Berkeley this past weekend. You know, I just think that, even looking to the 60s now. You know, we were talking about Dr. Martin Luther King and his compatriots earlier, and of course they put their bodies on the line to fight segregation and a very violent political police state apparatus in the Jim Crow South, and they earned their stripes in so doing, and a lot of them got beat up, some of them were killed, and of course I'm not advising anybody to become to put their lives on the line to the extent that they're going to endanger their lives. But I think there's got to be a happy medium here. And if we withdraw and allow the violent left to intimidate us or those of us who are young enough to go out on the streets and have their say, then we've really lost something. And I don't know if we're going to get it back. If we give up that right, you know, what's next? Will we ever be able to resume or reclaim that right if we give it up now? So I would say be very, very cautious by canceling rallies. Now, I did notice that there's some supposed Nazi or Daily Stormer planned rally for late September somewhere. You know, you have these tiny, I mean, they're either real crazy groups, small as they are, or they are very likely inspired by, if not infiltrated by, the government to whip them up into a frenzy that will interest the media. You know, meanwhile, I mean, this is more fake news. More fake news that the alt-right conservative constitutionalists are violent, racists, hate mongers, white nationalists. This is so completely absurd. I'd like to take a moment, because I think you were talking about this on your show this morning, Doug, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Yes, sir.
Who is, he's going to appear, I believe, on Hannity's Fox News program, which will begin airing after this program ends.
That's correct.
At 10 p.m. Eastern Time. But he gave a 16-minute interview this morning to Brian Kilmeade on the Fox radio network. And I got a line on that, actually from Fox News PR has been sending me all their releases. So I listened to it and took some quick notes. I just wanted to hit a few high points because I have tremendous respect for Dr. Gorka, as I know you do as well.
Yes, sir.
And this was an excellent interview because he had 16 minutes. Now, on Hannity's show later, which is probably being taped as we speak, unless they do it live tonight, he'll get maybe 3 to 5 minutes. So just run down some of the high points. He said, now this was done live this morning with Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Brian Kilmeade. Dr. Gorka said that he's participating in several initiatives right now to form new organizations which will help President Trump move forward with his original MAGA, Make America Great Again, agenda. He said he's currently negotiating with Breitbart to possibly return to an editorial position there. He criticized Secretary of State Tillerson for what Tillerson said yesterday on one or more of the Sunday shows when he appeared to put distance between himself and President Trump in the wake of the Charlottesville incidents. Gorka emphasized that he's not here to attack the administration or any of the current members, but he wants to support President Trump from outside. He described Trump as the insurgent and said that on January 20th, 2017, there was a hostile takeover of, in effect, the shadow government and the deep state by President Trump. He also said the GOP thinks they won the election, but they didn't. Actually, a New York real estate mogul won the election. He said, as of this moment, in his opinion, there are only 4 real believers, that's his term, in MAGA, left at a senior level in the White House. He didn't name them and said he won't. He said there are, in contrast, a lot of people in the White House working for President Trump who would have been perfectly comfortable working for Hillary Clinton if she won the election. He also said the Obama administration played dirty, again, his quote, by trying to sabotage, his quote, the incoming administration. He mentioned something about the Obama outgoing administration managed to spend 1/4 of the fiscal year budget for White House management on their hacks, either to see that they were kept in power or he really didn't specify what he's talking about, but that's grounds for further research there. He said, right now, the wrong people are at the helm in the White House, and we're going to try to write it from outside. Of course, he's speaking pretty much in sync with Steve Bannon there, too. And he ended by saying that the fake news industrial complex, which apparently is a term that he coined,
yeah, that's right,
is out of control. So, you know, in a 16-minute interview, I have to say I was riveted to listening to it. Oh, and by the way, I created a quick URL. If people want to track down that interview, MP3 to either stream or download it, it's not that easy to find, but here's how you can find it. Go to tinyurl.com/Gorka828. Once again, tinyurl.com/GORKA828 for today's date. And that URL, that tiny URL, will take you right to the 16-minute interview with Dr. Gorka, which I would recommend to anyone who really wants to get a great, up-to-the-minute insight from someone who is dedicated to President Trump and who had to leave the administration's employ, obviously, but well worth hearing and studying, paying close attention to.
Well, you know, I had done the article that I began it by saying that it was not, what we're seeing is not like a multidimensional chess match, as some people want to believe. It's a street fight. And that's kind of what my thought is. And the fake industrial news complex, he admits to someone else in near him creating that and then him using that, which I thought was really interesting. And of course that lines right up with Sean Hannity's the destroy Trump media. I just think, you know what, when I wrote this article, I was thinking about you and Sean Hannity and talking about, or talking with Gorka. I can almost see I can almost see this rending of personnel inside the White House. So I'm glad to know the item that you, if you don't mind repeating that, the office of the, or the budget, a quarter of the budget was spent on keeping Obama minions in power or in the
right, because apparently, I mean, I have to listen more closely to the interview, although he kind of went over it quickly, that particular point. Apparently a lot of the White House staff in the West Wing it transitions from one administration to the next. Either that or President Trump and his appointed top people have not yet had the ability to clean out the Obama holdovers or the rhinos or whoever they are, the people not committed to make America great again, and put in people who agree with that agenda. And of course now it may be an uphill battle with the new chief of staff and some of the others who are in there. We will see, but you know, all we can do is try to hold his feet to the fire. That is the president of the United States. And I'm glad to see Gorka is going to be out there, Dr. Gorka, Steve Bannon. I've been checking out Breitbart.com a lot in recent days. They are supposedly the number 67th most popular website in the United States. So they're getting a lot of page views. And I'm really pleased to see that. They're really in a very good fighting spirit right now.
Peter Chowka, thank you so much for joining us. By the way, we've created a special URL for you. It's HagmanReport.com/author/P. Chowka. But we'll create a hyperlink to that for all of your articles, all in one place on the Hagman Report.
Thank you so much.
Hey.
Have a great rest of the show, and God bless.
God bless you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks,
on the other
Peter.
Side... T.C. Joseph is in studio. I think he's got a suntan now after being baked by the lamps.
Right? He's going to be with us for the rest of the show here in studio, and we're going to get into a number of things, including his books, and we got a few of them right here, folks. Don't go anywhere. On this edition of the Hagman Report, we will be right back.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the GMAG Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super GMAG Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.